Aloha, everyone. I'm your host, Christina Lainey Mitri, and welcome to Smart Living Hawaii's podcast, where we discuss smart homes and technology, sustainability, healthy lifestyles, and smart business. Today, we're going to continue our Sustainable Leader series, and we're going to have a talk story with Ryan Naka. He is the director and of the philanthropy and marketing for Project Vision Hawaii. We will zero in on Project Vision Hawaii, homelessness, and how we are tackling this housing crisis we face as a state. Aloha, Ryan.
Hi, Christina. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. We usually work together in real estate, but he is going to be sharing some of his more philanthropic career also as well, on his side, in addition to Project Vision Hawaii. So I'm going to just give a quick little bio on him and Project Vision Hawaii before we begin. So Ryan is the director of philanthropy and marketing for Project Vision Hawaii, and he got started in fundraising while working on political campaigns, which eventually led him to Project Vision in 2020. Since then, Project Vision Hawaii has grown from a couple dozen staff members to over 1,000 statewide. Ryan, also a realtor with the Smart Living Hawaii team, he also works as a business consultant for his family's company, Charlie's Taxi. So he has a full plate, and it's just great to have him. This is the first time he's been on our podcast. So I'm excited to share what he's been working on. And let's see, just a little bit on Project Vision so we can start and you guys have a good understanding where we're going here. So Project Vision Hawaii did start in 2007. They're providing vision screenings in Title I schools across Hawaii, hence its name, Project Vision, just to begin. Throughout the years, PVH, which is it's also abbreviated as, evolved into a multifaceted nonprofit organization, and leveraging partnerships with government agencies, businesses, and other community partners to maximize its impact. And this is true since I've known it from the beginning. It's really grown. Project Vision continues to adapt and evolve in response to the ever-changing needs of the community, with a steadfast commitment to its founding principles of compassion, collaboration, and empowerment. Project Vision Hawaii remains a shining example of grassroots activism and collective impact, inspiring positive change for generations to come. So, let's see. Maybe we can start with your background, Ryan, and how you got into this space of housing and homelessness. That would be great. Where did you
Yeah,
grow up?
I actually was born in Hilo. My parents did this weird thing where they got married, moved to Hilo, had me and my older sister, and then we moved back to Oahu when I was about 3 years old. So I've lived in Kaneohe since then. I've grown up there. I consider myself a Kaneohe boy. So yeah, definitely have strong ties there. My mother is from there. She was spent her whole life there, except when we lived in Hilo, obviously. But yeah, we definitely love our community.
And he's a graduate of Kamehameha. So he definitely has his Hawaiian ties as well. Did you have any fun facts to share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I feel really proud of the legacy that I come from. My mother's father's side, we obviously own Charlie's Taxi, and so that's something I'm really proud of. My great grandparents founded it in 1938. It's the oldest transportation company here in Hawaii, and being Japanese American, starting a business in the 1930s, it's definitely not easy. And then on my mother's side, we're Richardsons, and so we stem from a long line of judges and attorneys. My grandfather's cousin was Supreme Court Justice William S. Richardson, which the School of Law is named after. And then my great 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 grandfather and his father served on the House of Nobles, which were advisors to the monarchy, so Queen Liliuokalani, Kamehameha III. So yeah, just really proud of the legacy that I come from.
Awesome. He's much younger than I am. And but working with him, it doesn't seem like it. So he's a go-getter. Let's see. Let's just jump into Project Vision since that's why we're here. Kind of let's talk about more of like the mission, how it's evolved and its history to where we are today, and maybe some of the projects that you guys are working on right now. That'd be great.
Yeah, so the organization itself was founded in 2007, providing vision screenings in Title I schools. And so those are schools that show more financial need. And a lot of almost all of our schools in Hawaii really fall under this category of Title I. So it's something that we're really proud of. We've grown over the years. We see about 20,000 students every year, and we go to every school on a 3-year rotation. So we're really following students throughout their learning and development. And so since then, we've expanded the program to now provide hearing screenings, and we're working to add on dental just because these three basic screenings are very important, especially when we're looking at students' development. A lot of times, students are assumed to have behavioral issues, but many of them can't see the board or they can't hear the teacher effectively. And so, addressing some of these basic screenings are very important to ensure that students have the tools that they need to effectively learn and become, productive humans in this world.
Yeah.
I would say from there, we really were doing that from then all the way through about 2018. In 2018, we acquired our first mobile hygiene trailer under our program called Hi'ehi'e. And with that, we provide hot showers for individuals facing homelessness across the state. We have trailers on Oahu, Big Island, and Kauai, and we're looking to expand to Maui very soon. And then with the hot showers, it's sort of like an introduction to building very real relationships with the people that we serve. So, although it seems very simple, a hot shower is something that many of us take for granted. It's sort of, when someone's houseless for going on years, sometimes just getting to the point of taking your clothes off and being vulnerable in that sense actually takes some time. A lot of people are in the same clothes for months, years. And so just getting from the point from where they want to seek a shower from us to the point where they actually do, it takes time. And we understand that during that time, it's our job to build real relationships and a form of trust, so that they know that they can come to us and it's a safe place. We've also seen that a shower really is sort of just that introduction. And so we have to build out the program to provide more wraparound services, which we've done. So now with the hot showers, we have case management, housing placement, wound care, workforce development, SNAP Medicaid enrollment, really whatever they need, we try to provide it or at least refer them out to an organization that can provide those services. In last year, we operated the Pulama'ola Medical Respite Kauhale with the governor's administration. And that was a medical respite tiny home village located across from Queen's Hospital in Punchbowl, really for individuals who are houseless who have been discharged from the hospital but still need that place to recuperate. Many times if we're discharged from the hospital as housed individuals, we go home to recuperate. But houseless individuals don't have a place to safely recover. And so that's the intent of it. It was a pilot project for 6 months from the second half of last year. And I would say it was a pretty huge success because we were able to build better policies and procedures on how to best support these individuals. How do we build procedures within our organization? As we move into the housing space. And so we've taken everything that we've learned from there, and we've used those policies and procedures when we opened the Pu'uhonua'o'nene shelter on Maui, and that was open for the survivors of the tragic fires in Lahaina. We still operate that to today. We have about 150 residents on site with us daily. We've since expanded the program to not just be for survivors of the fire that were houseless, but also for all of the houseless on the island of Maui. So it definitely has grown to expand and address a bigger need. And I would say maybe a month ago, we opened the Kamalu Ko'olau Kauhale in Kaneohe, which is a part of the governor's administration, and his goal to reduce homelessness by 50%.
Yeah, so that was a lot. Would definitely like to break down a little bit more on two of them. So I think for people to understand the whole intake and the process of what it takes to go from when you're checking out of a hospital, like a regular person checks out of a hospital and then they go home, and then there's usually rehab and there's extra things that you do, or go to rehab, or there's, clinical people coming to your home, right? That's part of your insurance and in order for you to recuperate at home. Did they actually do that as well? Like if there were things, were there people that would come to the respite that you guys had, to care for them as well? Or was it just more like a place for them right after they leave the hospital?
Yeah, so I think in all of our programs, we try to build a holistic approach to healing and recovery. And so this was sort of another example of that, where we had 10 tiny home units. And what we did was, for the intake process, hospitals in the urban area would refer patients to us, and our medical director would review the referral forms to determine if they would be a good fit. Obviously, if someone was on life support or needed more full-time care, that wasn't really what we were providing. Individuals like that need more of a facility that can address those needs. We were really, again, like you had sort of mentioned, for those individuals who are being discharged but just need a safe space to kind of recover. So, we would work with the local hospitals, with our medical director, and determine if they are a good fit, that they could reside at the medical respite, and then we would actually bring them in and provide care. And we had staff there 24/7, meals 3 times a day. And then we also had other sort of activities like game nights, movie nights. We had cultural pr practitioners that came. We had yoga, weight training, you name it. We tried to bring it in to make sure that we really were building a community and not just like a facility.
It sounds like these people wouldn't want to leave after they were recovered.
Yeah, I mean, that was a challenge, right? It was sort of a good problem to have, right? People wanted to be there. And so we know that what we built there really was a community and that it worked. And so that's really what allowed us to expand into the shelter and the Kauhale and Kaneohe, because we had learned how to build this model.
Yeah, so dovetailing into the new project that you guys have in Kaneohe, and maybe we can, that's what I really wanted to focus on, because that's, the feature that we wanted to really talk about, since it is new, it is in a new community, and it's more long-term type of housing. So maybe you can start with maybe like homelessness in general, and what defines homelessness, and what, would then be an intake for you guys at that project. Because I know the other one was really based off of who was coming out of a hospital. So for this one, who would, I guess, quote unquote, qualify for these homes?
Yeah, so essentially, there's four definitions under HUD, but when we're looking at someone who's homeless and who we're bringing into the Kauhale, really just someone, it's pretty obvious, right? So we actually start off with referrals from agencies. So IHS, which is, this is their district, as well as St. Anne's, which conducts a lot of homeless outreach. We're really getting referrals from these individuals, and then we're also getting what's called self-referrals. So individuals that are coming to the Kauhale seeking a place to live. And so through these interviews from our case managers and our shelter or our Kauhale manager, we're able to determine if this person fits the mold or fits the definitions of homelessness. And which it's pretty obvious. You're either, homeless in your current state, or you're on the verge of being homeless, or maybe you're fleeing from domestic violence. So there's four definitions, but I mean, really the people that are seeking services from us, it's pretty apparent if they fall within these definitions or not.
Yeah. And could you also explain I didn't know this because I was working with Inspire Church over at like Wahiawa area, so that there's different regions, right? And certain people have intake on like the different organizations. Could you kind of break down the island a little bit so people know if there's any homeless in certain areas, who they go to?
Yeah, so I think to kind of create more of a better system, and within homeless services, resources are very scarce. It's not, there's a lot of money that goes into it, and there's not a lot of money made from it. And so in order to best use resources, they've divided up the island, well, really the entire country. But so we have what's called continuum of cares that oversee, there's one for Oahu, and then there's one for the rest of the state. And so the one for Oahu is called Partners in Care, and that's the continuum of care that oversees all of us as partners. And then we have the other continuum of care for the rest of the state. And so what we have to do is then break down the islands by districts. IHS is over the Windward District. And then there are others. I'm not too familiar. This is more of a question for our director of housing, but he would know which areas fall within their districts. But so essentially what we want to do is it's sort of like this machine, right? So you have IHS doing more of the outreach, and they're kind of getting a better lay of the land. And then what they'll do is refer to us for the housing part. So if they When they're conducting outreach, they're interviewing these clients and seeing what is it that you need, right? Do you need housing? Do you need food? What can we help you with and connect you with so that you're best equipped? And so if they do need a place to live, and they know the parameters too for the residents of our kauhale. And so if they do feel it's a good fit, then we also have a pretty streamlined process for referrals. So we have an email, we have referral forms online that people can access and send over to us. And then just like a medical respite, although this is not a medical respite, our medical director, along with our kauhale manager and some of our other directors, will review the applications, meet with these individuals and see if they are a good fit and actually begin that intake process.
And so, what would make a good fit for your kauhale? Like for the intake and everything, like what do you have certain guidelines? Just so if anybody is listening in, because they don't necessarily have to go there, like it, would they come to you if that you knew somebody in Kaneohe or whatever that might need some help? Could they reach you directly?
Yeah. So, I think a great place to start is our website. If you go to projectvisionhawaii.org/kamalukoʻolau, which is the name of the kauhale, we have all of the intake packets there, the application with the house rules and sort of what to expect. And then also there's our email, kauhale@projectvisionhawaii.org, where you can send those forms to. And I think that's a really great place to start because first and foremost, we do have house rules. Our main priority is ensuring that our residents, our staff, and the surrounding community is safe. And so we want to make sure that we truly are building community and not just hosting, random people. It's really important that we have people from Kaneohe that we're prioritizing just because, again, we want to be a part of this community. We are a part of this community. I'm from there. And so those are really important elements that we have to consider with this kauhale. And so I would really encourage people to take a look at that website, download our packets, read through the house rules, and then just make sure that, this is going to be a good fit, that this person's comfortable with what our expectations are. And then it also kind of lists the things that we offer. So we do have
Sure.
24/7, yeah, we do have 24/7 security. We have case managers on site. We have meals 3 times a day. We have mobile shower trailers, so you can take a hot shower, use the bathrooms. We also have a laundry center. Through the generosity of Microsoft, they donated a sizable gift to us so that we can have a Microsoft tech room. So we actually have individuals there filling out job applications, getting their GED. So that's really exciting. And then we also have a nurse station as well, more for like street medicine, wound care type of services. And so if someone is in need of medication on a daily basis, they will make sure that, you know, this person's taking it and has a safe place to store it.
And this is for single people, individual. They're really tiny homes. Like when I say a home, it's more of a room, right? And it has like a bed and some basic things just for a single person. And the bathrooms slash kitchen areas and laundry and everything are separate, that they all have more communal base, right? So, they do have some pictures online if you look them up, and you can see it because everything's like brand new, and it's really, nice how they put it all together for everybody. And they all have their own little keypads so they can get into their rooms on their own. What else do you guys, I guess you guys have a lot of program or projects or activities for the residents as well?
Yeah, I would say the design of the kahale really is to foster community. And so we really try to encourage that, you know, part of that is through the design, right? So that's why the units are smaller. I think we also have to be just fully aware of the cost. You know, it could be pretty sizable to operate a project like this. And so having a smaller unit makes it a little bit more cost effective. But most importantly, I would say, is that it encourages people to come out of their units and, you know, fellowship with other residents and truly build community. And so that's why we have smaller unit, but we have a lot of outdoor communal space, because then it gives people the opportunity to come out and socialize with one another. But it also gives us more space to host a lot of community organizations and partners. We have game nights, movie nights, we have cultural activities. We just had students from Kamehameha schools come by. They wanted to give back, so they hosted a drive with hygiene products, and they also danced some hula for the residents. So that was really cool. Yeah, just really creating a space where the community can participate, and also our residents can fellowship with one another. So that's really important.
So, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like how open senior centers can be, like if they allow it, right? To where if you do have other nonprofits or groups that would like to work with you guys to help, with something that like the students just did, that other people can like reach out and find a way to give back to the community and your community at that Kauhale. So with that, let's just jump into what we hope to envision for the food space and garden that we have been talking about lately. So I don't know, through time of the things that I end up talking about on our podcast, and diving into not just affordable housing and homelessness and this type of sustainability. I like to see an integration of the other type of sustainability, which would be food related, and growing food in Hawaii, which we import 90% of everything that we partake in here as residents of Hawaii. So if we are able to grow food on the land that we have, it's obviously the best option, I feel, if we can do more of it. And so, could you tell us a little bit about the extra space that this property has, and I guess the potential that you see, and hopefully we can work with you on?
Yeah, so in this particular property, we have a strip of land which is pretty sizable. I haven't measured it, but it's a good size of land that's currently unused. And so in trying our best to be good neighbors, we've engaged with, you know, the neighboring community, the neighboring churches, neighboring schools to see, you know, what are some of the immediate needs of the community and how can we be a part of the solution. And so one of the needs that was expressed to us was the need for a food garden. You know, the school next to us actually doesn't get meal service, and so they are relying on home lunches, or, you know, it's really challenging. And so we thought, you know, there's this piece of land here. How can we not just benefit our residents, but also maybe the neighboring school? And so that's where the idea for a food garden came up, just because it makes sense. And so that's really exciting because it's not just a form of, sustenance, but it's also a form of therapy for the residents. We currently do it on our shelter in Maui. We have a pretty large community garden, and it's amazing because it doesn't just provide fruits and vegetables and foster the growth of native plants and species, but it also is a form of therapy for, residents to come by and put their hands in the ground and really connect with the earth. And I think that's super important. Again, like in all of our programs, we're trying to build this holistic approach to healing and recovery. And so that's just another form of, I think, therapy for the residents. And it's such a win-win when the community can be a part of a garden like this. And if it can even benefit the students of the school next door, I think that's just another win.
Yeah, so we're both eco-rotarians, and our club focuses on the environment and sustainability in different ways, food security being one of them, and farming. And so we do work with the Kaka'ako Community Garden, and that's a food forest as well. And we've been working with them for numerous years now, and our goal would be to expand. And this is an opportunity for our club to help start and help them get started with planning out what that garden looks like and what specific types of plants and trees to be planting, and kind of laying out with the landscape that they have, and bringing in experts that know this field very well. And some of them are farmers, some of them are edible landscapers, and they do this for a living. So to bring in these people to help lay it out, and then also to get the community involved with what we're doing. And also, hopefully, we can get in the Rotary clubs close by, because we are, our quote unquote residency is in Kaka'ako, but because we focus on the environment, we're all over the island and state really. But if we can partner with also another Rotary Club close by, then it would really help with the maintenance, because food gardens and growing food, as you know, is a constant workaround. And if you're not using pesticides and you're not using all this, you're going to have, a lot of maintenance involved. So, getting the community, different Rotary clubs, and, the churches and the school, if everybody does chip in and participate, then it will be very, very successful and thriving at any given moment, versus it not being tended to for a month or two here and there. So yeah, we're kind of excited about what we can do, and how we can fundraise for this. So it'd be great to see what the community can put together.
Yeah, I think it's also a good, it's sort of like a good opportunity for some of the residents too to step up and champion the garden and take responsibility over it. I mean, we've seen that in our other property as well, where certain individuals have really stepped up and really taken ownership over the garden and said, you know what, I'm gonna go weed, even though, nobody else is out there, but they're out there because they want to see it thrive. And for many individuals, seeing something grow like this, it's metaphoric, so yeah, it's really important.
I think it also, if somebody doesn't feel like they have a purpose at this point in their lives, for whatever reason, sometimes these little projects will turn into a career for them. Like it will, start growing into some kind of passion of theirs that they didn't know they already had. So, anyways, I'm really excited about it, and it's really cool that we can, our eco-rotary, which we're focused on the environment, can really still be integrated with social services. And I think that if there's a way to blend the two, that's always the best, because it is more holistic thinking, and the way we kind of, tackle a lot of these things are not just, siloed in certain areas. It's really being able to look at everything as a whole and work together as a community. So, yeah, I'm excited. Well, I think, is there anything else you'd like to share that's that Project Vision Hawaii is doing that we haven't covered?
I mean, there's just so much that we do as an organization. It is tough when people say, "Oh, what do you guys do?" Well, it's like, "Well, do you have like an hour for me to explain everything?" We
I think
do.
it's cool. I think it's cool that it did start as a vision when you talk about like visual, like your eye vision. But the name itself can mean so much more because vision has a different meaning, right? And where that goes, is really just, how you've guys grown it. And it's just, I think that's amazing because that's what I remember it being. And now it is so much more because you guys were able to adapt and to what Hawaii needs. And I think that's very important as well. So.
Yeah, it's sort of, we tell people now it's more like our, instead of like the literal version of vision, it's more like our vision for what we want health and human services in Hawaii to look like, what we want access to care to look like. And so that's sort of more of our interpretation of it these days.
Awesome. So could you repeat again, maybe your the email and then also maybe a phone number? Because I mean I some people might not be able to access or do much on the computer wise, right? So maybe just a number that someone could reach out to for extra support.
Sure. So, we can be found online. Our website is www.projectvisionhawaii.org. You can contact us via email. It's info@projectvisionhawaii.org, or you can give us a call at 808-201-3937.
Awesome. Well, I think that's it. Thank you so much, Ryan, for your time and for everything that you're doing for the community. And I feel very blessed to have you as a team member with us in Smart Living Hawaii for real estate. But this is how realtors are. We are doing more than just our jobs. We do try to give back to the community, and this is the way Ryan does. Definitely. Thank you so much for your time that you invest into Hawaii. And until next time, live smart. Thanks, guys.
Bye.